Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where engineers, real engineers even, get together to talk, dissect and review work life in the data networking industry. This week, we are coming to you live from Las Vegas, where the latest show has come to town. Yes, Cisco Live. The corporate jolly where engineers go to drink at the Cisco fountain of Kool-Aid knowledge, drink at Las Vegas bars and generally cause trouble. And reporting from the virtual show floor on the status of the blah blah cloud, we have Tom Hollingsworth. Tom, what have you been doing at Cisco Live since you got in?
I have been standing outside the registration desk and waving people down as they come in to tell them how great Packet Pushers is.
And they're all going, huh? Who?
Well, it helps that I'm giving them beer at the same time. So. But now, other than that, I've just been getting checked into the hotel and the conference and just kind of figuring out where all my classes are going to be starting tomorrow.
Right.
And just the usual trade show stuff.
Cool. And also joining us this week, our novice, our rookie, is Tony Matke. Tony, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a senior network engineer for a credit union here in Indiana in the States. I'm currently going through a large network rebuild, basically gutting two data centers and starting from scratch.
All right. So what we want to do today is just talk a little bit about Cisco Live and why you wanted to go along and what it does. I mean, obviously, I think most of us know that Cisco Live is the Cisco love-in, where all the Cisco peoples get together to gather at the altar of all things teal and worship the god of networking and packet forwarding all over the place. And obviously Cisco puts on a lot of training material. There's even courses for the sales grunts so that they can learn something. Well, actually, mainly they just rub shoulders and get their credit cards out, I think, mostly. But there's an awful lot of stuff going on at the show. We're looking forward to Uncle John's keynote to see what he's got to tell us. I know that speculation from the press has been rampant about what the key message for the show is, because every year Cisco Live comes up with a message. There's usually a theme or a topic which is a marketing message or a strategy that Cisco wants to thrust on us all, and that we will all jump up with peals of delight and joy and worship at the words of John. But in the meantime, I think it's time. Tom, you're a multiple-time attendee at Cisco Live. I think you're even a net vet. Is that right?
I am a net vet, indeed. And I have been 6 years now. This is my sixth Cisco Live.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're a net vet. You get the special badge.
I get a special badge holder, and I get to get a book, and I have to go find a Cisco Press book I don't actually own yet. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, give you a book. Yeah. Like, you haven't got them all already.
Yeah exactly. Now, it's really nice. I keep coming back year after year because, I mean, there's a lot of good breakout sessions. You get a kind of sneak peek at some of the things that Cisco's thinking about putting out for the next few months. You get access to people you don't normally get to talk to in real life, you know, product managers and the engineers that are developing some of these cool new protocols and ASICs and things like that. And usually what I do is I wait until they're kind of alone, and then I corner them in the middle of the show floor and I ask them a whole bunch of hard questions. And that way, since there's nobody around, they can go, okay, well, don't tell anybody I said this, but yes. So it's kind of neat to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So is this year looking fairly similar to previous years? Like, is it in the same convention center in Las Vegas that we went – oh, was that for Interop? Is that the one I went to?
Mandalay Bay.
Mandalay Bay, center. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it is this year again. It's pretty much the same layout they had last year. You know, it's I've talked to a couple of people already just in a little bit of time I've been here, and they're kind of impressed. It's a pretty slick show compared to some of the ones that I go to. It's, you know, it's well run, well oiled machine. They make sure that you know where you're going the whole time. It's pretty nice from that perspective. I never feel like it's amateur hour.
Well, I thought that when I was there at the Mandalay Bay for Interop, and, you know, disclosure, HP took me over to Interop to talk to me about their products. I thought the whole venue there was pretty tightly compact and pretty well put together. You know, the rooms are all within cooey of each other. You can get to them all. They're not like, you know, they're not a million miles away.
My first Cisco Live was down at the Hilton Convention Center in 06, and that was a disaster. I think I walked myself to death going down there just because you would have a breakout session halfway across the convention center, and there were some you actually had to walk outside for. And as pale as I am, walking outside in the Las Vegas heat could be, you know, spontaneous combustion type thing.
You're just not built. Okay, so Tony, what about you? What, this is your first year. You're a Cisco Live virgin. What's your impression so far?
Yeah, this is my first year. I have been to several other conventions. I used to go to all the ISP cons back in the day when that was still alive. This is, like Tom said, this is a very well-run show. It's very closely integrated with the convention center. Everything flows very well. It's pretty easy to get to everything. Not too much walking to get to everything from your hotel room, even if you're staying at the hotel or Mandalay Bay.
Hmm.
It seems to be very well organized. I'm really excited to see what it has to offer the rest of this week.
For those of you who do not necessarily familiar with Cisco Live amongst the listeners, is that a lot of Cisco Live is about getting into classes where you actually get talks and discussions about various Cisco things, and you go into different tracks. And so there might be security tracks where you go and listen to a bunch of security presentations over the 3 days, or you might be into the data center or the routing and switching, or there's even, you know, various sessions around CCIE labs if that's your current torture. So, Tony, are you going in to do anything in particular, cover a particular stream, or are you just wandering between different technology sets?
I'm kind of wandering in between a few, mostly centered around data center, though. We're deploying a lot of Nexus gear right now. I'd like to see what everyone else is doing with it since, you know, I'm fairly new into the Nexus realm just the past 8 or 10 months.
Hmm.
The other reason I come here, you know, the classes are great, and it's great to hear what everybody has to say, but I really enjoy the networking with people because I think your greatest asset, you know, as being a professional engineer is who you know. And that resource you have of, hey, I know you've worked on this.
Hmm,
You've probably run into this problem. You know, what did you do?
I also found it a great way to get up to speed on technologies I wasn't familiar with. So maybe I am familiar with data center, but I'm not so great in IPS units, for example. Go and sit in on some IPS or some service provider technologies.
The key out there is, you know, you could look at, there's opportunity to really drill down in some things that interest you, you know, like switch troubleshooting, but there's also that opportunity to pick up that class on, say, Lisp or something like that that I may not necessarily be so familiar with, at least get some background so that when I come back and people start asking me questions about it, I can say, hey, I remember that from life.
And you can then go off and look at all the presentations. Tom, you've been there several times. You know the PDF presentations that you get at the end. I've used those extensively for years.
Oh yeah, those pretty much stay on my hard drive year round because invariably I'll run into like a really weird dial plan problem, or I'll need to know something about like a 3750 that I remember vaguely seeing a troubleshooting command on, and I'm like, oh great, I've got the PDF, it's handy. And now that they have the live virtual where you can go out and you can download those PDFs for like 3 months after the fact. The nice thing about the presenters is they're always updating those PDFs and putting the latest versions up there, correcting errors, adding in new features, and it's really handy.
Mm.
Blah, 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 cloud.
Yeah, because you can sit there. I remember I often like to just go and buy the presentations, and then whenever I get into a technology challenge that I haven't sit before, I'll go and get these presentations out and start trawling through them so that I can come up to speed to some level of competency before I dive into the actual nuts and bolts of it. You know, and I often use them for that sort of training process. I know that Cisco Virtual, which is the online version of it, is actually free for 6 months, I believe.
Yeah, they made it free this year because I think they finally decided to give that resource back to their customers and to some of their partners that necessarily, you know, travel budgets are kind of tight mm-hmm. this year and everything. I can already see that there have been a couple of places around live where they've kind of cut back on some of the things they might have normally done. And so by giving that away to their customers for free, they're kind of, you know, drumming up some grassroots support for things like, you know, adopting new technologies and things.
Previous years, I had a look at it. I did sign up for it, and it's actually looks usable this time. In previous years, it looked mm-hmm. like an angry bear buffed up all over a screen with flash. It was revolting. Somebody had used some disgusting UI metaphor that, yeah. You know, you had to walk into a convention center and then go around the rooms, except it was running Shockwave and it took like 5 years to download. And all you wanted to do was download some PDF files, and it took 7 minutes to get from the front screen to the wherever it was. And to download the PDF, you had to go into each room for that presentation. It was excruciating.
Yeah. I remember that UI, and I remember thinking, if I wanted to walk around a convention center, I would have paid the money to come to this yeah. convention center. I want a list of things to click on to get my information. Yeah. I'm impatient when it comes to getting things.
I just want to see a directory list.
Yeah.
I don't need some autistic interface for retards trying to, you know, with some metaphor for a convention center. That's just stupid. So, Tony, what are you looking to sit in for? What classes are you going to be moving through?
I'm definitely registered for the Lisp class that Tom mentioned. Also sitting in on some 7000 troubleshooting, The 1000V class I'm looking forward to a lot. Also, Jeff Doyle's IPv6 class.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I think that's going to be very interesting. It might be able to actually convince some more people at where I work that, you know, IPv6 is here. It's coming. We actually need to think about it.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of the other engineers that think, oh, well,
tomorrow.
We have time.
Yeah. No, maybe the day after.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm busy. Next month.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. I'm pretty sure about IPv6 is going to be, I remember the days when IPX and IP, IPX, Apple Talk and IP, and there was no, it was clear that IP was the way to go because of the internet, but it just took years. It dragged on for years and years, and I don't think there's going to be a big bang. It's just going to be this sort of limp into, we're not going to, you know, wake up one day and shake into a bright new future. I think we're going to see just a sort of a limping into a bit here, a bit there. And a bit here and a bit there, and then some people more. You know, it's just going to go on for years. I think we're still going to be migrating IPv4 in 10 years' time, in my gut feel.
It's a very good possibility. I think it's going to be born out of necessity.
Yes. Still looking at the RFCs that are coming out that are solving various challenges around IPv6, like the NAT question still isn't, but they're now talking about prefix translation instead of network address translation. You know, and there's, you know, other prefixes coming out. I saw there was an RFC released this week for mobile IPv6, which has probably been either a bit overdue or not that anybody ever used mobile IPv4. It seems to have died off. I don't know if anybody is using it today.
Yeah, I think they all skipped it and went to mobile IPv6 because it just worked compared to trying to get mobile IPv4 working.
I think there's more need for it now. Everybody's more mobile. I think the smartphone generation might actually see, might make it possible to have mobile IPv6, whereas five, six years ago when I actually last worked on mobile IPv4, all we had were laptops that would be mobile. Phones didn't do data, and 3G connections were really expensive, and there wasn't a lot of Wi-Fi around. And I think the market might be different today where, you know, Wi-Fi's everywhere. I mean, in the UK here, BT actually has it now, so that their BT is like the incumbent carrier, and when you put a BT DSL box in your house, their Wi-Fi is now actually shared. And so if you're a member of BT's wireless service, you're actually using people's household bandwidth to access the internet.
Yeah, there are a couple of carriers in the States that are starting to do that because it's a lot more cost-effective for them.
You know, that means that there's more Wi-Fi than ever before in the oddest places you can imagine, really, and it's kind of a strange way. So I think mobile IPv6 has a chance to come up again. It'll be interesting to see. And now that they're the crypto stuff too, now that the processing power, one of the biggest problems with IPv4 was the crypto challenge between securing it. Now that there's more crypto in the, you know, more CPU horsepower and crypto chips are cheaper than they used to be, we could see a resurgence. At least it is in that sense. Yeah. Tom, have you been on the show floor there at Cisco Live? Is there anything exciting or is it still closed?
Still closed off. They're going to open it tomorrow night, Monday night, for the big reception. Looks like there's going to be a lot of data center. That's from the map that I saw. They're really hammering home data center.
Hell of a
now.
Prediction there, Tom.
Yeah, I know. I'm just really, you know, shooting for the moon on that one, right? It looks like it could be some very interesting stuff out there. I'm sure that they're going to have a lot of vendor engagement. You know, I'm just going to have to white out the barcode on my badge so that they're not engaging me 6 months after the fact with, hey, you got any large $4 million data center deals coming up? No.
Why do you ask, O2 docs?
One thing I did see, Cisco has a multi-vendor data center that they've built inside the World of Solutions. They're going to be taking people through it for tours, and I wonder if that's kind of in response to that G-Word report that came out, if they want to kind of show that they can play well with others. I'm going to kind of hit them about that and see what they have to say as far as, you know, oh, well, it's multi-vendor as long as you're not wanting to run inside the fabric path or something like that.
Well, Cisco's running a challenge with that, isn't it? Because the Nexus 2000 is theoretically their multi-vendor play. The Nexus 2000 on the Nexus 5000 or Nexus 2000 on the 7000 is really sort of the old, this is how you connect Ethernet, lots of Ethernet ports, just like we always did. Or you can choose to go down the UCS path. I've been learning about Nexus 2000s. In fact, I've been torturing myself lately by reading about Fibre Channel. If I sound especially grumpy, that's why.
Well, you guys are talking about the 5000s and 2000s. You know, we've been working with those for about the past 8 to 10 months now. Yeah, I've got a little bit of complaints on those. You know, they're building this entire infrastructure about being flexible and being able to adapt to different situations. But they've got so many limitations on the 2000s for how you can build virtual port channels or even a normal port channel on them. If you need to connect, you know, any multi-gigabit servers or any redundant servers down off of a 2000, you're really limited. Something that we're going to have trouble scaling. As a matter of fact, for the second data center we're building, I've actually removed all of the 2000s from it, and I'm just trunking everything back to the 7000s, and I'm just going to put some extra copper cards on there.
I don't know how far back you go, but in the old days, we used to have a thing where we used to put hubs on the ends of switches. So the switches was the backbone, and then we'd attach hubs, and that would reduce the size of our broadcast domains. And that was our sort of low-cost way of transitioning from hubs, which is what we had with a few. And to me, the whole Nexus 2000 thing looks like a hub. It's kind of like a switching version of a hub in the sense that it's a dumb beast because it actually just muxes a whole bunch of Ethernet ports into certain fabric connections back to the 5000 or the 7000. It's actually just a bank of problems or pain. It's like a bag of pain waiting to hit you.
We've had a couple of them. The forwarding engines go out in them. Just a lot of weird issues, and they're kind of difficult to troubleshoot because, they are managed from a different device.
So you've got to manage two devices at once, or three, four actually, because you've got the two core devices in the fabric, like the 5000s, and then you've got the two 2000s connecting to one server. So if you've got one server to problem, you've actually got to coherently test all four devices to find out where the problem is, really.
Well, all the way up to six. I mean, if it's a layer 3 issue, your layer 3 happens at your core, so you got to look at the 7000s as well.
I'm not a big fan of the N2K, I must say. I can see why they built it, because it's a cost-effective way of connecting other people's servers, is my view. I could be incorrect there, but it just allows sort of lots and lots of 10 gig and 1 gig without actually putting the so-called expensive chip inside of it, making the most of your 5000. So you're not a big fan. You can see you use them, but not willingly.
Yeah, they were already purchased before I started this job I'm at now. They had already started deploying, and I'm kind of going back through and re-engineering everything. So
use them for out of band networks or backup, monitoring system, not for critical stuff.
Not currently, no.
Fair enough. Are you back, Tom? And thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again in a week or so. Make sure you come back. I'd like to thank our external resources for joining us this week. Tony, tell people where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at @TONHE or on routerjockey.com.
Fantastic. I'll look forward to catching up with you again in the future. And Tom, where can we find you?
Well, you can always check me out on my blog at networkingnerd.net. I'm sure there'll probably be a couple of posts about some things here at Cisco Live. You can also find me on Twitter as Networking Nerd. My snarkiness will probably be a little Kool-Aid for the next couple of weeks, but bear with me back to my usual self before too long.
Okay, and I'm Greg Farrow. I'm not at Cisco Live because, for those of you who may or may not know, I actually live in England in the United Kingdom, and I wasn't able to travel over to Las Vegas for the event. I needed a bit more cash than what I'd had. So maybe sometime in the future, I'd look forward to catching up with you at a future Cisco Live event if we can make that happen. You can find me also on the internet at etherealmind.com, on the Twitter as @etherealmind, and on Google+. You can look for Greg Farrow, or you could look for the Packet Pushers, and sign up to be in our circle, because we would like that, because Facebook isn't for us. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, and send us an email to packetpushers@gmail.com. Leave comments on G+. Or check out the podcast website at packetpushers.net. Leave comments. As always, remember that even when you're at Cisco Live, too much networking would never be enough.